Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Delighted to have you with us on Here and Now Anytime, where we lean in with some news of the day to keep you up to speed, and then kick back with some arts, music, and culture to lift your spirits. Go ahead, subscribe and follow. We've got a lot ahead.
There are about 23,000 unlicensed gun dealers in the United States who would now be required to run background checks under this new rule.
The most significant gun regulation reform in decades, closing the gun show loophole. It's Thursday, April 11th, from NPR and WBUR Boston. Welcome to Here and Now Anytime. I'm Shirley Jahan. On the show today, O.J. Simpson has died. The football star, the screen star, and then the man who stood trial in one of the most watched court cases of our time for the murder of his ex-wife, where all our nation's hot-button issues of race, criminal justice, media frenzy, domestic violence all converged. And then the high school drumline percussion world championships are coming up. We'll talk with a snare drummer and the director of the program at an Oregon high school.
It's supposed to be kind of a feast for the ears and eyes, you know. It's really super fun and loud and exciting.
First, unlicensed dealers often sell firearms online or at gun shows without any background checks. So tens of thousands of guns get into the hands of people not allowed to have them, people with felonies or domestic violence convictions. Now new rules to finally close that gun show loophole are taking effect. The Biden administration calls it the most significant gun regulation in decades. Robin Young talks with NPR White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram about what the impacts might be.
This is a pretty significant new rule by the Biden administration. There are guns that are sold at gun shows, at flea markets, over social media. To put this in perspective, there are about 23,000 unlicensed gun dealers in the United States who would now be required to run background checks under this new rule. If you zoom out here, there's about 80,000 licensed gun sellers already. So this is a big chunk here of folks selling firearms who are now subject to conduct background checks on the people they're selling guns to.
Well, and let's talk about why the Biden administration and others feel this is needed, because this loophole has always been in the wording of the laws. In 1968, the Gun Control Act said anyone engaged in the business of selling guns had to be licensed and do background checks. That was changed in 1986 to anyone selling with the objective of livelihood and profit. But people could say, hey, this isn't my livelihood. I do other things, too. So they could get around it. So what is the change in the language now?
Yeah, I mean, the language now is saying that if you are selling guns predominantly for profit, you are now subject to conduct these background checks in the process of selling guns to whoever you're selling them to, right? That could be over the internet, that could be at these gun shows. This really covers a much wider ground in terms of where people are buying their guns.
This new rule came out of a bipartisan bill that was signed in 2022 after the Uvalde shooting. But we know that after the 1999 Columbine school shooting, it was discovered the two shooters then got their guns at a gun show without a background check. So there's been a lot of, you know, push to try to get this, but a lot of pushback from the gun lobby. The new rule has set up ways that you will determine if someone's predominantly selling guns, you know, if they've got advertising or a system to accept credit card payments or rented space. But I'm sure there will be pushback on this rule.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, there are definitely groups who, when the, you know, introduction of this rule was first put out towards the end of last year, already said, you know, we're planning on filing a lawsuit. We're already opposed to this. There are also Republican lawmakers who are really adamant about finding ways to sort of scale this back. But, you know, White House officials said yesterday, they told reporters that they feel really confident that this is going to hold up. They feel like it's within the scope of the law. We'll have to wait and see what happens in the courts. But that is something that potentially could be coming up pretty soon.
And what is the White House saying about the impact that this rule might have on gun violence?
Well, the White House is saying that this will impact the sale of tens of thousands of guns. And you know, a lot of shootings that happen and, you know, are traced back to guns that have not been sold through the background check system. So not only does a background check screen the person buying the gun, but it also helps track where these weapons are going and where they're coming from. So in the future, if there was a gun to be, you know, seized at a crime scene, a homicide, a mass shooting, something like that, the gun having gone through the background check process and the person having gone through the background check process, it becomes easier to trace some of these weapons as well. So that is something else that this rule also clarifies.
Well, and this is a rule, not a law. What would legislation do that maybe even this regulation can't?
Well, if Congress passed some kind of legislation addressing background checks, you know, that's a lot more baked into the law, right? It can't really be undone. And if there was another administration to come in, you might see some changes there. So that is why you hear Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, who chairs the Office of Gun Violence Prevention at the White House, they are repeatedly calling on Congress to take actions on universal background checks. They want Congress to pass an assault weapons ban. That's not likely going to happen in a divided Congress. And so that's really why you see Biden taking these measures. Keep in mind, Robin, this is also really an important issue in terms of the election in November. Gun control is something that young voters are really passionate about. Voters of color are really passionate about. And those are two groups that Biden really does need to show up for him in this election in order to win re-election.
NPR White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, O.J. Simpson has died. Football star, beloved celebrity, and then the man at the center of one of the biggest murder trials of the last century, a case that inflamed and laid bare the racial divide, domestic violence, fairness in the criminal justice system. Stay with us.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Carvana. On a mission to make car buying more convenient and affordable than ever before, in minutes, you can browse thousands of options under $20,000. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today to get started.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them, and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
O.J. Simpson lived at the place where so many American fascinations meet. Sports, celebrity, race, crime. A football star, one of the first black athletes to translate that into stardom in movies. Commercials for Hertz. He raced through an airport. Go, O.J., go! Then many Americans said the same thing to their televisions as they watched his white Ford Bronco being chased down a California highway at low speed by police, who wanted to question him in the murders of his ex-wife Nicole and her friend Ron Goldman after a bloody glove was found on his property. If it didn't fit, you must acquit, his lawyers said. It didn't, and they won. His trial, one of the most sensational in American history, revealing the country's divide. Many black Americans who'd seen too many black men railroaded cheered, felt O.J. was set up. But then another jury forced him to pay compensation to the families of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. He was later sent to jail for armed robbery. On Twitter today, his family says Orenthal James Simpson died yesterday from cancer at age 76, surrounded by loved ones. Lori Levinson, who was a legal analyst for CBS during Simpson's double murder trial, is also a former federal prosecutor and professor at Loyola Law School. Lori, just as it comes to you, what do you remember about the trial most?
Oh, I remember everything about the trial. I mean, this was, quote, one of the trials of the century, that there was so much media coverage. There were over 1,000 reporters from around the world, and that it all did start with that Bronco chase. So this wasn't like any other case we've seen before. And part of the reason is that you had a camera in the courtroom.
Yeah.
So the American public was fixated on this trial with celebrity lawyers and a celebrity defendant. And a jury who knew that it was sort of making a very big decision for justice.
We saw him make a big show of trying on the gloves. There were cameras hovering over the Bronco in this slow chase down the highways in California. And we've been trying to explain to younger people, back then there were just a few places where you got your information, and everyone in the country, it seemed, was watching. Look, his lawyers successfully convinced jurors that L.A. police racism was behind mishandled blood samples. This was 3 years after officers who beat Rodney King were acquitted. So police racism was believable, but many others felt he got away with murder. And just what do you think the turning point was? Was it the gloves?
Well, I think the glove was a big moment, but frankly, I'm not sure the prosecutors were ready to try this case. The defense pushed it to an early trial. They had very capable lawyers. They had a jury who, as you said, was concerned about how the LAPD was working. So that was a turning point. And another turning point was when Officer Furman, Mark Furman, testified, and that they could use him to point out the racism in the system. So throughout the trial, even the collection of the evidence, we all now think that DNA is really darn good evidence, but this was the beginning, and it's only as good as it's collected. And there were a lot of questions pointed out about both the competency and whether they handled that right.
Right. Well, how big was it? Oprah went live with the reading of the verdict. Let's listen.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count one of the information.
And right there, you saw black members of the audience cheering, white members of the audience in shock at that. I mean, that's part of the legacy. There has and had been a divide, but we saw it.
And we saw it and we felt it. I was at the courthouse. The street literally divided with blacks on one side cheering, whites on the other stunned. And it made us take a hard look at what was happening in our justice system with regard to race. Now, the really odd part, to be honest with you, is it's not like O.J. Simpson was treated like any other black defendant charged with homicide in Los Angeles. But he became a symbol.
Yeah. Well, the families of the victims of a crime committed by whoever, Nicole Simpson and Ronald Goldman, her friend, won a $33 million civil lawsuit against O.J. He paid little of that. 13 years later, he was sent to prison for armed robbery. He was trying to get back sports memorabilia from a dealer. He never recovered his status. But what is his legacy in, you know, a little over a minute that we have?
Well, I think his legacy for some is sadly that somebody who got away with murder, that somebody who fell from so high, a Heisman Trophy winner, a celebrity. For other people, he was the champion of justice in a corrupt legal system. So you sort of see in this case what you want to see. The big change is that it now changes how America looks at the courtroom.
And do you teach your students this trial?
I do. It's harder now because they weren't alive when this case happened.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of legal lessons that came out of this case that are still applicable today. So I mention it. They've seen movies and documentaries about it, but they weren't alive for O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, and now he is gone at 76. Lori Levinson, former federal prosecutor, professor at Loyola Law School, and CBS News analyst during the O.J. Simpson trial. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Up next, the World Championship Drumline Competition is coming up. We talk with a high school snare drummer about the power of precision and the power of the team. Deepa Fernandez has that in just a beat or two. Stay with us.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you. If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest-growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Okay, close your eyes for a second. Now imagine you're on your dream vacation. No work calls to answer, no text messages to respond to, just your suitcase and an opportunity.
The opportunity to just take yourself out of your routine and travel deeper.
How to actually take that dream trip. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
High school drumlines around the country are gearing up for the Percussion World Championships coming up in Ohio. At least one drumline that will be competing tells us they're going to the championships for the first time. And that is the Kingsman Thunder Drumline at Rex Putnam High School in Milwaukee, Oregon. And we're joined now by the director, Renee Ornay-Jama. She wrote to Here and Now. She wrote to our letters inbox to share how hard her students have worked to get to this point. And we just had to have her come and gush some more. Renee, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having us.
We also have one of the Kingsman Thunder Drumline snare drummers with us, Grant Lord. Grant, welcome to you as well.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So, Renee, I'm going to start with you. For those who haven't seen an indoor drumline performance, it's very visual. Can you describe what it looks like, what it feels like?
Yes, so we compete and perform in a gymnasium. And so there are props involved, there are costumes, and a ton of percussion equipment. So we have a battery, which is your marching field drums. We have snare, bass, tenor drums that are like wearing a drum set. They're very heavy. Mm. And marching cymbals. And then in the front, we have a group of musicians that play mallet instruments, electronics, sometimes drum set players, bass players. And together, we have about 22 kids making a big sound and playing music that's been custom written for ourselves and for competition.
And there's a lot of theatrics, dancing, even kind of acrobatics type stuff. It's amazing.
Yes, it's like runs with drums.
Runs with drums. It's all while playing. You know, talk about why theatrics is so important to this performance.
So our show this year, for example, is called Beyond Dreams. And so the theatrics we have, and sometimes this is called percussion theater because it's involved, a lot of props, which for indoor percussion competitions has really become much more prevalent in the last 10 to 15 years is to have these, lights and props. And, we're moving with drums to a specific dance and choreography. It's supposed to be kind of a feast for the ears and eyes, It's really super fun and loud and exciting. And it's just impossible to be bored when you're watching this show, which lasts a total of about 6 minutes or so.
And how long did it take you for that 6 minutes to write it, to practice it, to choreograph it, to get it to that? Like that 6 minutes, how much work goes into that?
It's pretty much a year-long process for us.
Wow.
Because in this particular area in Oregon, in our school district, there are no marching bands. And so it's kind of like we're the only competitive percussion group. And so I start with the idea of what the show is going to be about pretty much as soon as the next show as the last show ends. So when we're wrapping up a season, I'm already thinking, what should we do next year? And it's a year-long process.
So Renee, are you the creative genius behind the entire performance?
Genius? I don't know about genius, but I sure have a lot of fun creating the show. And being a percussionist myself and a teacher, it's a way for me to be creative, but also provide an opportunity for kids to get really good at their instruments.
I'm sure now everybody's dying to hear some more of this music, so let's pause for a sec and give the people what they want. Here is the Kingsman Thunder drumline again. So Grant, how long have you been playing the snare drum and how long have you been in this percussion performance?
Yeah, so I started playing drums in third grade. Right now I'm a junior in high school. So it's been a big part of my life. And I've really started focusing on snare, among other things, in sixth grade. And I joined the Kingsman Thunder drumline in eighth grade during COVID. It was very difficult. And I've just loved it ever since. It's been my home away from home.
What do you love about it? Talk to us about playing the snare drum.
It's just so, it feels really good. It feels good to get better. It feels good to learn the music and just be one with the instrument, I guess. And as a snare player, you're not so focused on yourself, but you're focused... Since you play with others, you're in a line, and the snare drum has such a cutting sound. It cuts through the whole ensemble, and you have to play clean and just know exactly what you're doing in every single beat of the show, and it's just so incredible.
Does that feel kind of fun, or is there, like, pressure? I mean, like, it's such a grand performance that you're all doing. Like, so many things have to go right.
There is lots of pressure, but at the same time, you have to have fun with it, or else you're not doing it right.
I mean,
yeah, it's hard, but it's so rewarding at the end of the season.
Yeah. So is there something that you can tell us that people, you know, might not understand about what it takes to perform, what it takes to get out there and not just nail your snare drum performance, but be able to nail all the theatrics of it as well?
Well, it's not just going out into a gym or any performance setting and just whacking on something and just being loud. It takes a lot of concentration throughout the whole entire show, and you're not done until 5 minutes after the show even. And it's a constant focus that you have to have throughout the whole entire process. And again, you just have to have fun. And that's the reason we do it.
All right, Grant, so you're heading to this big competition. Now, it's put on by the nonprofit youth organization WGI. It's called the Percussion World Championships. It's in Ohio, and it really celebrates the music and the theatricality of groups like yours. How are you feeling about this big competition coming up?
Oh, I'm very incredibly excited. It's been my lifelong dream to attend this competition as a spectator, let alone performer. And I'm going to see all the groups I've looked up to throughout my years of drumming. And it's just going to be so incredible to perform in the same area as them. And it's going to feel amazing. Like it's a once in a lifetime experience that I am so excited to have.
Renee, I bet you this has been a dream for you as well. I mean, you built this program at Rex Putnam High School. Now you're going to see the fruits of that payoff, but I'm wondering, what kind of resources did it take to get this off the ground? How did you do it?
Oh, I think we would need a much longer show for that, Deepa.
I imagine grit just sticking
well, the
to
community
it.
Supports this, yes. You know, because we got it. When we go out to compete, it's a 13-hour day, and we're out there, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, tailgating, and it's like, you know, we're surrounded by 20 other drum lines doing the same thing. And so we got to feed the kids and donations of prop materials, lighting, you know, so we have a lot of support.
And how big a deal is it, Renee, that your kids are going to this competition in Ohio?
It's a pretty big deal. And I think the Pacific Northwest doesn't really understand, like in other parts of the country, like California, Texas, and some of the other eastern states, you know, where band is normal, and this is a normal thing. But like here we are in Milwaukee, Oregon, going over here to represent this entire area, it's a very big deal. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that I didn't plan it this way, but my son is also in this, and he's a senior, and he's Grant's buddy, so he's also a snare drummer. And what happens with this, you know, culmination of going to Dayton is we want more public awareness of, if you don't know what this is, you should really come out and see it. Because a lot of people don't understand it. And when we play for people, their mouths hang open and they go, oh my God, I knew this never existed. And I'm like, yeah, this is normal. This is a normal worldwide thing. It's adjudicated. It's supported. It's been going on for decades. And here in the Northwest, it seems like it's people just don't know about it. And so it's a big deal for us personally and for me personally, because it took a lot to get to this point with this particular group. But it's also a big deal for the Northwest, and we have a lot of support from even our friendly competitors. They're rooting for us.
Well, maybe now that you've made it so far, you won't have to arm wrestle over time in the gym with all the sports teams. Maybe they'll like throw open those doors for you a little more.
I know, I didn't want to say it, but yes, the age-old, you know, sports versus arts narrative is alive and well, and, you know, I'd like to see school districts have more of these groups, and I'm already consulting with other schools outside of our district to help them bring up their programs.
Well, Renee, thank you for writing into our letters mailbox to tell us about this, because that's how we learn what's happening, these great things in the community. Renee Orne Jama is director of the Kingsman Thunder Drumline at Rex Putnam High School in Milwaukee, Oregon, and Grant Lord is one of their snare drummers. They're headed to Ohio later next week to perform for the first time in the Percussion World Championships. Renee, Grant, thank you so much and good luck.
Thank you.
Go see these groups. It's fantastic, and thank you for featuring us.
Thank you so much.
Pictures of the drumline at our website, hereandnow.org. Our show comes to you thanks to the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories are produced by James Mastromarino, Thomas Danielian, Lynn Menigan, and Ashley Locke. Our editors are Todd Munt, Micaela Rodriguez, Michael Scotto, and Kat Welsh. Technical directors are Mike Moschetto, Caleb Green, and Michaela Varela. Mike Moschetto, Max Lieben, and Chris Bentley created the theme music. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin. The executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. I'm Shirley Jihad. Thank you for being with us. Be sure to subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Elastic. Over 50% of Fortune 500 companies use Elastic to help them make insightful and impactful decisions at speed with Search AI, taking your data into the future. Learn how at searchpowered.elastic.co.
The Indicator from Planet Money is a daily podcast that helps you make sense of what's happening in the economy. And video games are a growing slice of that economy, with billions of people around the world identifying as gamers. That's why we're dedicating a week-long series to the growing business of video games. Listen to the Indicator for Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Listen to Embedded for moments that stay with you.
I could smell the smoke. I could smell the dust.
Voices that resonate. Stories that change the way you think about your life.
How did we get here?
The Embedded podcast is NPR's home for original documentary series. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.